Blog Talk Radio.
This is all about wine.
Dedicated to the wine industry since 2009, featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do in this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we've had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwineTR. That's www.facebook.com/allaboutwineTR. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
Thank you, bus people. I forgot to ask you, I had a big bad storm go through here about an hour ago. Did it head over your direction or?
Well, it's been raining. I sent you an email. I sent you an email, whatever it was, earlier, about 5:30, 6 o'clock, somewhere around there. I don't remember. But saying, yeah, it's raining pretty good over here. And the thunder and lightning stopped for a bit, but I don't know. And then I'm looking at the radar, and I'm like, it's all in your area as well. So I didn't know if you know what you were experiencing, but well, here we are.
So. Yeah, it was really nasty for a while there. It came down with lightning and thunder and you know, cracking right over the top of the house and all that. And I wasn't on the computer then. I was doing stuff out in the garage, and it was pretty nasty. You know, it was blowing and everything, and then it let up and sun shined for a little bit, and it started up again. So, and I think it was heading towards you, so I didn't know if you got it or not.
Our center is becoming from the south or, you know, south, southwest, somewhere in that area. I was watching the radar bands and stuff. I thought, well, that's kind of odd. And I looked on Facebook, and someone in southeast of the county was reporting hail. I'm like, what's up with all the hail this year?
Yeah.
It's changing. There's that much hail, and, you know, it's ridiculous. And not like small pea-sized hail. They're talking almost like golf ball size, and, you know, there's some damage from the hail. It's ridiculous.
That's what I heard too, that it was some nasty hail coming around out there. They were announcing it, and that it was like you say, a big hail.
There's just been this year, I don't know, past month or so, or month and a half, 2 months, I guess it's been, but just the weather's been very odd for Florida, especially when you're talking about the hail and the size of the hail. We don't get that.
And tornadoes too. I mean, there was tornado warnings for the mid part of the state yesterday evening, and they were saying, you know, Florida doesn't get the EF5s or 4s, even 3s, or, you know, but sometimes 1 and 2s, and that's enough to, you know, if somebody's standing by a window, they'll blow out the window and injure them. But, there was hail, our tornado warnings yesterday afternoon. So,
I was watching the news earlier. They did a report down in Fort Myers and along that area. You know, they were hit by Hurricane Ian, and they still haven't rebuilt yet. They haven't, I mean, there a lot of businesses have closed, and they said a lot of business owners have had to, you know, take on regular jobs, and, you know, they've let their businesses go because they can't rebuild. It's it still looks all torn up, really bad down there.
I saw a similar report that's saying that, you know, they're trying to get supplies in and stuff like that. And that's been a just a nightmare trying to get stuff in so they can rebuild. And, when they do get a hold of somebody to get stuff in, it's just so outrageous on the cost that they just say, no, we'll just wait. We're not going to do it now because the insurance didn't cover the exorbitant cost for things. So It's bad. Florida's been weather challenged for a while here.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw an email. I finally got a response from one of my people. Have a guest on the 22nd, it looks like. So I'll confirm this and get you the information, and we'll look at our guest here. It's been an ongoing thing. First heard from these people back in first of May, and she's Somstation. She's a guest with Somstation, or she works with Somstation, another one, and one of the sommeliers on there. We talked to the owner of Somstation, and she said she had sommeliers all over the place. Well, this Elise is her name, and she is one of the sommeliers that does the programs and stuff. So she will be on the 22nd. Is that right? Is that the Thursday? Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So 3 weeks. Let's see. 1, 2, 3. Now 3 weeks she'll be on the show and talk to us about her job with Somstation as being a sommelier and a taster and what they do and all that. So something to look forward to there for that. I'm glad we finally got a response from somebody. Like I was telling Mike before the show, I have been crazy trying to get guests on, and I'm not getting responses from them for some reason. I don't know why there is a problem out there. I'm sure my emails are going through, but yeah, I don't know. But we do have a guest coming up on the 22nd, so be sure to tune in for that. And let's see what else we got here. Any other? Oh, yeah. Whispering Oaks Winery. I don't know if you all signed up for their emails, but Whispering Oaks Winery is located just west of Ocala, I guess, that area there. And they've got a busy summer coming up. They're doing their steak nights again. Choice of grilled beef medallions or surf and turf, which includes beef medallions and grilled shrimp, or 12-ounce ribeye or fresh fish or chicken. All that's served with a large baked potato, veggies, a ranch-style baked beans, a plated salad or soup, and fresh baked bread. $32 a person, does not include tax, gratuity, or alcohol, but it is delicious. So if you want reservations, 352-748-0499. And they've also got other stuff going on. Actually tonight, June 1st, they got a piece of P-E-A-C-E, piece of Woodstock. It's a tribute to the 60s group. And then they've got live music on the weekends. And coming up, they have a jazz music on Wednesday from 2 to 5. And Motowners are back to Whispering Oaks. Doesn't give a date when they'll be back, but they got a big Motown show. So lots of stuff happening, a lot of music and stuff at Whispering Oaks. They're located in Oxford. Again, that's just off of I-75, north of Tampa, east or west of Ocala and Gainesville, at 10934 County Road 475. And their phone number is 352-748-0449 again. And you can go to the website, www.winesofflorida.com. So a lot of stuff. If you like music and all that, beautiful place up there, beautiful atmosphere, and great venue for all this stuff. So something to check out in this month and for the summer coming up. There's lots of stuff going on there. And let's see, I had other winery.
I was just going to say real quick that $32 for a 12-ounce ribeye, I don't know if that was included, but that's really a good deal compared to what I've seen at some restaurants out there. 12 ounces, that's a big steak.
That's a big steak, yeah. That's a good size steak. And, you know, that large baked potato and, you know, all that stuff that goes with it, that's that they make fresh bread, too, and all that. I've been out there on tastings. I've had their fresh bread. Oh, my gosh, that is so good. So, you're right. It's a good price. It's well worth it. So if you get a chance, anyone, get out there and try it and give them a visit. They got some great wines, too, some blueberry wines and different things. You've been there, haven't you?
Yeah,
Mike.
Yeah, I did a tasting. I think I don't remember if I bought wine or what, but I, like you said, it's a very nice place. It's I think we just had a picture of it scrolling past on the little video thing. And there's Bunker Hill coming up, it's really a nice place. Good parking, you know, decent parking and everything. And it's I think it's coming up around here, but good atmosphere, good people. So, yeah, check it out. Hello? I think Ron went silent. Oh, gosh. Ron? Hello, Ron? I don't hear him. Let me check something real quick. Yeah, I heard that. Let's see. I don't hear Ron. Let me try something here. I am not connected. Oh. Please call in. Hang on. Am I still on? Hold on, folks. This happens. And some of the odd times here. I've got to check and see where. Still connected. So, okay, let me try calling in here. Well, I don't want to do that. No, Ron is. I think Ron disconnected. Yeah, Ron disconnected. He tried to connect again, but could not get on as a host. So let's see where he's at. See what's going on with him. Try to call back in here in a minute. You're listening to. Oh, let me put the little. Where's the weather warning? There it is. You're listening to All About Wine with Ron somewhere. He'll be here.
There
you are.
Am I here?
Yes.
I'm on the landline. I called back in on my phone.
Wow. Okay.
I got the while I was talking, and I go, oh, no, I'm gone. And I was gone. I don't know why it does that. Last week we had a glitch, and I couldn't get in at all. And then this week it cut me off. 12-13 minutes into the show. I don't understand what's going on. It's insane. Blog Talk Radio, there's an issue here, something, I don't know. And I'm glad we don't have a guest. In fact, it's happened with guests before, but oh my gosh. But I called in on the guest line. I can't get, can't talk to you on a guest line.
It told me it was
directly.
It had a little notice on there to call it as the host. And they go, no, I'm not going to call it as the host right now. Give you a second to call back in.
So I called in on the host and started loading up on new.
Give them something.
I had to put in the host pin. It connected me. It says, apparently you're calling into a live show. Hang on while we connect you. And so
I was on a live show.
That's crazy. I don't know why it does that. It just gives me this weird beep. That's it. I know I'm disconnected. I don't know the reasoning or what it's all about. We've got some information for y'all, and just some wine news as always. Is this the page I want? It's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not. What's going on here? Page I want. Okay. Let's share some wine news and wine information with you today. Cornell University has created a new wine variety. Cornell is very good about that. They're constantly creating new wine varieties that will grow in cold climates and stuff like that. And they have created a new one. This one they have been working on for many years. It's like 14 years they have been working with this thing and growing it and trying to get it. I said 14 years. They said, this article says, introducing Aravelle, A-R-A-V-E-L-L-E, Aravelle. So this is a new white wine grape that was 42 years in the making. Oh, my gosh, 42 years. That's crazy. It was a hybrid made by Bruce Reich, who is a well-renowned wine grower, wine breeder, wine breeding and all that. He's created so many. But he made this hybrid by crossing the Cayuga, White, and Riesling grapes in 1981, back at the start of his career. Now he's made 14 different grape varieties, and he announced that the Aravelle release at the Business and Knowledge and Viticulture Conference in New York on the 28th of March. He said it contains traits of Cayuga White, a grape developed at Cornell in 1972, which is, it was created to be resistant to bunch rot and mildew diseases, and it was easy to grow. And it ripened early to mid-September, which beat the weather up in that part. And he said this new variety combines those traits with taste qualities of a Riesling grape. And it says the Rieslings grow very well in New York. I talked about the Riesling in New York before. It is a beautiful grape down in New York. And it's also fairly winter hardy. But the problem is it's been susceptible to fruit rot during the wet period. So they deal with that. But it's, you know, the weather's pretty consistent. Rice is 14 grape varieties he was released under his program over his career, starting with Traminette in 1996 and doing others ever since then. He has came up with quite a list of grapes to his credit that are being used throughout the northern climates, because most all of them are cold resistant and resistant to the problems that are plentiful in the northern climates. He said simply, grape breeding requires many years of planting and testing to ensure that the quality and growers' trust are there. It says crosses are made based on goals and objectives of what is known about the plants that breeders have developed. So it's a long process. He said thousands of seedlings may be planted each year, with each one representing a potential new variety. And then these seedlings are tested for 5 to 8 years. And, you know, it takes about 5 years for a grapevine to give its complete
the total crop. They don't just give all the grapes first year. Of course, it usually it's about 5 years to get mature enough till you get the full crop out of it. And so that's one of the delays there. And they want to be sure that it survives that period of time and nothing happens and all that. 3 to 4 years after that, they begin fruiting after it's planted. And so some 12 to 15 years in, if the vines look promising, then the breeders propagate them and send vines to nurseries. So it's not an easy process. It's not a quick process to try to get a new variety out there. And you hear about a new variety and you go, oh, yeah, okay. But it is a quite a task. It's a huge investment, too, for the growers. They hope that they will yield fruit for 30 years after planting. And so if they're making the jump into a new variety, they want to be sure that it is going to be hardy and it's going to last for the 30 years, and especially in the cold climates. This is the thing that I just brought up a couple of times there, but it's something that's very critical. Grapevines can survive cold as long as it's not prolonged cold and it freezes too deep in the ground. Because if roots freeze, then it could cause problems with the plants, even killing it. Cabernet Sauvignon is a good example. If it freezes too deep in the ground, the cab will freeze. It will kill the grapevine. And so you have to, if you're planting cabs in real cold climate, you have to put a lot of protection around the grapevines. Mulch and stuff so that the ground stays warm enough so that those plants don't freeze down deep. So it's quite a task, quite a undertaking to get those. New ones came out, Aravel. And it says it's lots of characteristics of the Riesling as it. They have a picture here, and it looks a lot like a Riesling. It's amazing how much it does look like a Riesling on the vine here. So something new, if you happen to see Aravel, A-R-A-V-E-L-L-E, if you happen to see Aravel labeled in the store, especially up in the Northeast there, I mean, give it a try, and it should be a good grape. They're really excited. According to this article, they're all really quite excited about the new grape there. So, Aravel. Okay. Pierce disease. We haven't talked about Pierce disease in a while. It's just sort of like out there, and it's something just accept. But grapevine killing bacteria from the Pierce disease has been found for the first time in Humboldt County. And Humboldt is just north of San Francisco. You've got, my engineer just brought in my evening wine. Before we go any further, let's take a look at this. It's B.R. Cohn, C-O-H-N. It's Cabernet Sauvignon. You notice we do taste a lot of calves because we are calf fans. This is a North Coast 2020. North Coast Sonoma could be probably. Let me see what the back label says. And it says, B.R. Cohn, Cabernet Sauvignon, North Coast 2020, founded in 1984. In the heart of Sonoma Valley, B.R. Cohn Winery is known for producing fine wines of exceptional value. An olive tree-lined vineyard estate and a long history in music. The 2020 Silver Label Cabernet Sauvignon is a blend of select vineyards throughout the North Coast Appalachian, including our own Olive Hill Vineyard in Sonoma. With its ideal microclimate for growing Cabernet with intensely concentrated flavors. BRCohn.com, if you want to check out, C-O-H-N. Cellared and bottled by B.R. Cohn, Hopland, California. alcohol 14%. And that's all it says. It's got the warning on there. But let me. Oh, we've had this before. My wife and I, have had this before. We enjoyed it. And whenever we see a special on it, we always pick it up. Oh, wonderful, wonderful cab aromas. You can just really immediately know a cab by the aroma. Yeah, that's really nice. Not getting a lot of lakes on this, for those of you out there who are looking for lakes. I'm not getting a lot of lakes on this for some reason. Wow, that's unusual. Usually it shows it right away, but very, very little lakes, if any. It's just, wow, that's amazing. Nice dark color, sort of a garnet color. It's funny, I do that first sip and I see the legs form when I do this first sip down a little bit side of the glass, second sip. Oh, that's very good. A little bit lighter, a little plumminess to it, and getting hints of blackberries, and they're also not real heavy tannins. Very pleasant blend of Cabernet, though. It's a good example. Great. I'm just getting a wonderful aftertaste right now. Finish on it and giving me that Cabernet aftertaste, that dryness with the... this is a little hint of the tannins that are in it. It's not a lot of tannins in it, but it shows up in the finish more so than it does in the mouth itself. Good mouthfeel. Very interesting wine. I've had it before, and I've always enjoyed it. So, D.R. Cone, I will be sipping that during our show tonight. I do recommend it. Like I say, it's well worth it, and it's not real expensive. I think it runs less than $20 a bottle, at least around here. I don't know where different places have different prices, but around here, it's around $20. North Coast, Sonoma. And I was just talking about North Coast, Humboldt County. They are finding Classy Wing Sharpshooter in Humboldt County. Let's see, where's my cursor? I moved it when I... there it is. Okay. It says, grape leaf samples taken by Humboldt County Department of Agriculture has tested positive for Pierce disease. And in late September, the Agriculture Department submitted grape leaf samples to the California Department of Food and Agriculture Plant Pathology Lab to be tested, and the samples turned out positive. They said it came from a small domestic and wild grapevine from a small neighborhood located in Willow Creek. So... Willow Creek in Humboldt County. Three samples were tested positive, and the first time the disease has been detected in Humboldt County. So this is not a good thing. Agriculture Department took additional grape leaf samples in the same area in November, and a small number of those samples also tested positive. So due to plant dormancy, the Department of Agriculture will conduct further samples throughout the spring and see what's going on. What's the date of this? This is May. This is dated. Oh, this article is dated March 27th. So, but, you know, they're more than likely still getting positive results from it. But they are saying that it is here and they need to really start monitoring. If it gets in Humboldt County, which why would go to Humboldt County and not southern part of the county before that, down in Sonoma? And, well, actually, it's Humboldt, Mendocino, Sonoma, and across Mountain Napa, and then down to San Francisco. So if it's in Humboldt County, I'm surprised it's not moving south. But they will be monitoring it. Seriously monitoring it and keeping on top of that, because that could be devastating if Pierce disease gets around California and Napa areas and stuff like that. Okay, I had to top off my glass here. Engineer always brings in just enough for a sip, and then she, okay, so Pierce disease, we haven't talked about that in a while. Here's something I saw that is going to be interesting. California has a ban on pesticides that goes into total effect by 2050. Now, you say, yay, that's good, yeah, it is, but boo, that's bad, because the article here says California has unveiled its Sustainable Pest Management Roadmap, which is a long-range plan towards environmentally sustainable culture. And it focuses on elimination of pesticides by the year 2020. Well, okay, good. But it's not just vineyards, but it's everything. No more pesticides in all the trees and all the stuff that they have in California. And they do use pesticides on some of those. I mean, it's limited, but they do use pesticides because of, well, Pierce disease or any number of other bugs that could get into the plants and all that. So they're trying to get farm animals. Vineyards are already looking at doing what they can with control of the bugs and the grass and all that, and they're bringing sheep in. So the sheep controls the weeds by eating grass and the vine leaves, and they're also gives them manure into the soil, which helps. And it produces milk for the lambs, and the pasture raised meat is sold and all that. So it's another plus for the vineyards. But it says, while the vineyards are being environmentally conscious, the growers are being environmentally conscious about this, they have to start moving into the, well, organic aspect of growing, because that's basically, you know, when you start eliminating pesticides, that's what you're looking at. I can't help but think, when I was out in California a number of years ago, last time I was spending time out there, I was visiting a vineyard, and it was a grower of quite a few acres. They had over 5,000 acres in different vineyards in central and southern California. And I was talking to the head men of that, and I said, do you have any organic vineyards in the system? And he says, yeah, we have acreage that we have that we keep organic. He said, but he says, we always look at it that at the first of the season, when we get the plants start bud breaking, all that, everything is organic. He said, until we start seeing vineyards being attacked by bugs and by different things, and no more organic. We spray them so we can kill it, so we can have a crop, because if we don't, then we could lose vineyards and we could lose grapes. So we spray it, and we are no longer organic in that vineyard. Well, if they go till they cannot spray chemicals on it, then that's going to create a problem, the fact that what are you going to do now? You can't spray it, so it's going to have to be an organic spray, which some organic sprays do work, and they're working on making better and better organic sprays all the time. But it's still going to be something that might be a problem with trying to keep the grapevines completely productive and getting all the crop you can out of it, which could be a problem there. Organic farming or biodynamic farming might be, or being farmed biodynamically, seem to be doing well without the sprays and stuff, and the crops are coming out well. So it's something to do. They've created a U.S. slow wine guide,
which is, creates an awareness for matching eco-conscious wine producers with like-minded wine drinkers. And it's available in digital and print form. And it showcases wineries in California, Oregon, Boston, and New York. And the wine, the guide considers wine quality, adherence to terroir value, and environmental sensitivity. So it's like eliminating synthetic herbicides. They say, and I quote, the guide had mostly been marketing to the trade, but the tipping point is it's a guide for consumers who prioritize land stewardship. We have become advocates for producers that want to farm transparently, and we list many organic and dynamic farms that are not necessarily certified. We are inclusive. Consumers deserve to know about them as well, which is a good thing. I mean, if you're looking for organic wineries that are not certified, and certification, I mean, we've talked to people and we've had guests on that told us the process of certification for organic and for biodynamic, and it's quite a process, and it's a process that has to be monitored and re-certified periodically. I mean, you can't just get your first certification and say, okay, now we're good. You've got to continue being on top of the whole thing. And with this new law that going into effect in 2050, they're all starting to slowly gear up for it now. So it may affect prices and production, and even, if I dare say, the taste of some wines. It may improve the taste if they quit using pesticides on it and all of them start going straight organic or even biodynamic. You may see a cleaner, better taste. Those who produce it organically and biodynamically say that it is an improvement on the quality of the wine and the taste. So it may be everything coming out of California will be even better in the next 30 years or so. We'll see. I hope I'm still around to be able to taste it at that time and see what's going on. So, new ban, though, in California takes effect in 2050. Pesticides. See that? California bans pesticides by 2050. All over the state. So, it's going to be interesting. I mean, not just grapevines, but it's also going to be everything, all plants and everything there. So it should be an interesting thing coming up out of California in the next 30 years, or actually not quite 30, 27 years. Okay, so let's go on to the next thing that I wanted to talk about. And this is a bad thing here. We've been talking about bugs. Let's continue to talk about bugs. Vine mealybug is infecting Oregon vineyards. You know, it never ends. It never ends when you're growing plants and stuff. It's a constant battle. There's a little summary here. I'll read in and, you know, give a little detail on some of this stuff. It says, a point, vine mealybug, key vineyard pest worldwide. Point, cost $500 to $1,500 an acre a year. So if you have yourself a big vineyard, that could get quite expensive. Point, spreads quickly. Point, the vine mealybug is in Oregon. Point, it is suited to Oregon environments. Point, can be found underground. Point, chemical control is difficult. Oh, that's not a good thing. Point, it's a vector of vine leafrovirus. And point, quarantine may be key to manage spread. So if they find it, they're going to have to quarantine the area that's doing it. But the some points from the article here. The problem in Oregon is that
they tend to think that they are insulated from the problem of the vine mealybug, and they don't realize that the climate, they've thought that the climate is not suitable for the vine mealybug, although they are finding it there now. And it thrives in the ground, so it's not something that you can just walk up to a leaf and turn it over and there's the vine mealybug on the bottom of the leaf, as you can with other bugs and stuff. They usually like to stay under the leaves, but the vine mealybug loves to live below the ground where the soil conditions are pretty much stable and they don't have to worry about the climate above ground or anything. And the bug itself is a soft, flat, oval, segmented bug, and it derives its name from the white, mealy wax that covers its pinkish body. Mealybugs differ from other mealybugs. The vine mealybug differs from other mealybug species, such as grape, for a few reasons. The male mealybugs, similar in size as the females, have wings, and males fly short distances several times a year to mate with wingless females. So therefore, they're spreading around doing that. Then in the winter, the vine mealybugs stay under the bark within buds and in roots. Temperatures rise in the spring and summer, they inhabit all parts of the vine. And the problems stem from the sticky, sweet honeydew they secrete, which drops onto vines, producing black, sooty mold. The honeydew also attracts ants, and ants eat the honeydew and in return protect the vine mealybugs from predators. Ants also act as unofficial sherpas, carrying vine mealybugs from roots to shoots. Oh my gosh, you got a big problem on that. Consequently, vine mealybugs can contaminate and spoil fruit, grapes. More importantly, they serve as a vector for deadly grapevine leaf row disease. An infection occurs when vine mealybugs feed on the slim or vascular tissues of the grapevine, transmitting the virus from plant to plant. As a result, diseased plants may reduce yields, change grape ripening, may die. Sounds a lot like the glossy winged sharpshooter also. They feed on the thumb of the plant and cause problems there too. So it is an issue. It is a problem. And it's a problem that they are monitoring, seriously monitoring in California now. They said that there was a management company that moved plant materials and harvesting equipment from the Coachella Valley into Bakersfield and Fresno counties in California. And it says subsequently about 14 years, they had spread into Napa Valley itself. So a problem. Prevention is hard. Protocols for immediate quarantine is really the best practice. And sanitation is critical in everything that they do to be sure that they don't carry bugs from one vineyard to the next. But the vine mealybug, yet another bug to worry about on grapevines. Napa Valley Cabernet Sauvignon. Napa Cab still matters. Everybody, you speak of Cabernet Sauvignon and Napa comes to mind immediately. That is the main wine coming out of Napa, you think. The rise of Cab in Napa. Let me read you this little small area here that interesting. It said that when in the 60s, Riesling, Gewürztraminer, Demeanor, Chenin Blanc, Zinfandel, and Merlot were planted all over Napa, and nothing was really the king there. And there was some Cabernet, but it wasn't really that prominent. And early vineyard plantings in Napa were the result of settlement following the gold rush, and most of the prominent producers were of German origin. And because of that, Riesling and Chardonnay became the grapes that they were planting more than anything because of the German influence on it. In 1976, British Wine Burrier organized a formal blind tasting in Paris of Bordeaux, Burgundy, and California wines, resulting in a California Cabernet Sauvignon and Chardonnay taking the top honors over the French entrants. This was the Judgment of Paris, as it came to be known, and everything changed after that. In 1991, a news program on 60 Minutes aired a report called The French Paradox, stating that the antioxidants in red wines were beneficial to health and contributed to a lower rate of heart disease among the French. Well, the report flipped the switch for American consumers, and they said, we want red wine. And they really started to drive the embrace of red wines. So at about the same time, the 100-point scoring system came into effect on wines. It's funny how all this stuff started to happen about the same time. The 100-point scoring system came into effect, and it helped people navigate the wine world. The higher the score, the better the wine was, and so people were starting to look at the point, at the scores. In the late 90s to the early 2000s, the winemakers started to chase the trends of higher scores, and it was something that drove the wines more than anything. And if you're, it says, if picking at 25 grist done to a high score, and then picking at 26 or 27 grist must get you a really high score, sugar levels on the wines. And they pick it at 25 grist and turn it into a big, bold, high alcohol because you ferment out the sugars and turn it into alcohol and get a big, bold wine. So they figure, you know, if 26 or 27 grist is going to give you an even bigger, bolder wine, which is going to give you a bigger, bolder score that people were doing. And so they started to go crazy on that. So Colgin Cellar, Screaming Eagle, Opus 1 started to get big scores because of their big, bold wines. Robert Parker and Wine Spectator was the one that was really driving it more than anything there. And it really caused Napa cabs to go crazy wild because of the scoring system, and they were getting such high scores. And people said, oh, we got to have good, it must be. And so it was driving the business. Media headlines and stuff nowadays don't do that as much. You don't get something driven by scores. Strong demand continues to drive prices for Cabernet, though. In 2022, average price of a ton of grapes from Napa Valley is running you $8,947. That's $8,947 a ton. It's crazy expensive. It should be around $2,000-$3,000. Most wines that you buy, most wine grapes you buy, are about that, $2,000-$3,000. Some not even breaking the $1,000 level. And Napa cabs are way on up there. It remains the top wine grape planted in the Napa, red or white, and it accounts for more than 52% of all overall plantings. Like I said, just a few acres were there in the 60s. Now there's over 24,000 acres of Cabernet Sauvignon vines in Napa. The average price of a bottle sold direct to consumer from Napa Winery, $73.34 in 2022. That's up $8 from earlier in the year. And it's... also, the average tasting room purchase in Napa County, if you go up there and taste wines and buy it, the average purchase of a tasting room, $377.87.
staggering to me. It really is staggering to me. I mean, for $377.87, say $375, you can buy yourself. You can jump over to Sonoma. You can go down to Livermore. You can go up to Humboldt, Mendocino, and buy yourself a substantial amount more and still have good quality wine. But they're not Napa Cabernets. And that's the key to it. Napa Cabernets are king. I mean, you mentioned Cabernet Sauvignon, and it is Napa that comes to mind. So this is what happens. The article goes on to say that the future is not going to change. If anything, it's going to get more expensive to pick up Napa cabs. They are the wine. The wine, if you want Cabernet Sauvignon, you can get French blends with cabs in it. You can get Cabernet from different areas around the country, but they're still not Napa. That is the standard which everyone strives. This is just like a Napa cab. Well, no, it's not. It's just like your cab and be proud of it. I've had some very expensive Napa cabs, and because I know the price of it, it just sort of makes me think, oh my gosh, this is this much money. I've had some nice ones that were a quarter of that price and were very good. So, but that's just me. I'm looking for wines that will satisfy me and not bankrupt me. And some of those Napa cabs with their big, bold tannins and big, bold alcohol and all that, those aren't ones that you go home and open up with your spaghetti dinner tonight. Those are the ones that you put in your cellar or wine cabinet and you let that thing sit there for 15, 20, 25, 30 years. And then it's ready to be drank and ready to be enjoyed. But I can't see doing that. I've got wine put away now that I'm slowly bringing out, and they're great, but that wasn't wines that were that much money back then. So when I bought them. So Napa is still king. It's for a cab. If you want a cab, Napa, no doubt, is still the king. But by all means, watch your, if you got the money to spend on it, then, good for you, go for it. But I can't do it myself. Okay, let's see what we got here. There was a body found at the Berkeley Marina about a month ago, and it was a wine company representative from Florida. He was missing. They think maybe he was on a boat and he fell overboard, but they don't know. The cause of death is still being pursued. They're not sure why or what happened, but a wine representative, he represented Italian wines, and he was found in a marina in Berkeley. So I just thought that was a California representative was found there. Let's see, where's the name? Oregon State University has found a new method. This is just a quick FYI thing for you here. They found a new method on how to detect in wines. And they said that they've been studying wildfire smoke and wine for years, and they said that the old way of testing wasn't working, so they were looking for a new way to test for smoke taint and find it quicker and easier and faster. And it has taken them a long time to come up with something that would work. And they're also working on a process to remove stuff in it, the theophenols, in the wine that, and it can then still be sold. So it's just a filtering process.
a filtering process that they have came up with that will clean the wine out from the smoke taint taste, which is good. If they can get it at a reasonable price, it doesn't say anything if it's difficult or anything in this little article, but they said that it does work, and they're building a new testing lab on campus which can handle the wine from all the Oregon wineries and other areas too, some of the other areas. So good for them. Maybe it will work, and if it's a simple process, if it's easy enough to handle, then maybe it can be spread out and smoke taint won't be an issue anymore. New Zealand scientists have created a new Sauvignon Blanc variant. Now, Sauvignon Blanc, if you want a good Sauvignon Blanc, you go to New Zealand, or you buy a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. They are noted for their Sauvignon Blancs, as much as Napa is noted for their Cabernets, New Zealand is noted for the Sauvignon Blancs. And they've came up with a new one. $125 billion wine industry in New Zealand. And the program is hoped to add more variants of the Sauvignon Blanc. Currently, it has 26,559 hectares of Sauvignon Blanc vines, and they're due to increase that by 12,000 hectares with the new variant. They are right now over 6,000 variants that are available, although they only use just a few. But it's something like the Pinot Noir. The Pinot Noir has all sorts of variants, and the variants don't mean that the wine's going to taste different. What it simply means is that they grow better, or they are resistant to something, or they the bud break is sooner, or a little bit later even, and they ripen sooner. It just, the variants can cause all these different things. And of the 6,000, I don't believe, it doesn't say, I don't believe they use all of them. I'm sure they don't. But the new variety, they said, is improved yield, resistant to disease, frost tolerant, and uses water more efficiently. So they've came up with a new Sauvignon Blanc. But again, if you want to try a good Sauvignon Blanc, New Zealand is your go-to. Okay, let me see what this next one is here. Where is it? This one I want. Yeah. Oh, here we are. Effective January the 1st, 2024, California wineries and distilleries will have reporting and payment obligations to CalRecycle under what they call the bottle bill. Now, yet again, another thing in California, and this will add cost to your bottle of wine. California's state container deposit system established the Recycling and Litter Reduction Act, called the, and as such, wineries and distilleries will now be required to comply with the bottle bill's California redemption value payment and reporting obligations beginning January the 1st. Importantly, because all wines and spirits sold in California after July 1st, 2025, must be labeled with some type of approved statement. Producers should start including this information on the bottles and or labels as soon as possible. So you'll see that popping up on California wines before long. The type of beverages that this will apply to is beer, malt beverages, wine, spirits, and spirit coolers. And it's for bottles smaller than 750 milliliter or 24 fluid ounces, it's 5 cents a bottle. for 750 milliliter or larger is 10 cents a bottle, and for boxes, bladders, pouches, and similar containers, and these are wine in a box, it's 25 cents. And they have a registration and payment method that they have to follow and submit on a monthly basis. So, labeling obligations, all wines and distilled spirits in California sold after July 1st, 2025 must be labeled with CA redemption value or California cash refund or California cash refund or CACRV. And it can be added on the actual label or by sticker, stamp, embossment, or other similar methods. So you'll be seeing that popping up on California bottles because they'll probably include it on the labels because it's easier just to have it on the label and as they're printing it. It will cost them more for each one. You can redeem it, but it will cost you more. They're not going to absorb the cost if they ship it out of state. So watch for the California after, 2025, so 3 years from now. Or 2 years, this is 23, 2 years from now, you're going to start getting cost up to $1.20 a case for bottles, 750 bottles, and quite a bit more for boxes. It's what did I just say? Let me see where I find it again there. Yeah, 25 cents for box wines, X on it, and I'm sure it will be printed on there. So it's going to cost more because of the regulations. If you want to save all your bottles and drive them back out to California, you can get the refund on it. It's simple as that. Okay. Washington State growing biodynamically. They are starting to embrace it more and more up there. Currently, three of Washington's approximate 1,000 wineries hold the Demeter Certified Biodynamic Certification. Others are seriously looking into it, and they're trying to talk to the three wineries and all that, so we may be seeing more pop up there. But three of them right now in California, or in Washington, hold the biodynamic certification. If you're curious, it's Hedges Family Estate and Domain Magdalena. And Domain Magdalena, both of those are Red Mountain and Willridge Winery in Neches Heights in Yakima. They are looking at increasing their biodynamic growth in Washington. Okay, and let me see the next one here. I know it's after 8, but these are, I just wanted to cover a couple more here. We'll be done. California growers are having a problem with the atmospheric rivers. We all are familiar with those because we all heard about it and saw that moving through the atmospheric rivers in California where it just gave those rain rivers. Now, because of that, it's causing plant pathogens that they haven't seen for decades in the state. There's the moisture in the ground, the moisture in everything is really causing a problem that they did not anticipate because of all the water, and it is causing problems that were actually stopped many years ago. There's a soil-borne pathogen found mostly in tree roots, and it doesn't usually spread to the branches, but because of the storms and the right conditions, the pathogen swam up trunks as the winds blew the spores into the air and rain dropped it back down into the canopy. And some of the trees and orchards are going to be dying, and they can try to prune the infected branches off or apply fungicide, but it's not guaranteed that it'll work. Also, the same thing, there's another pathogen, which I'm not even going to try to pronounce the name because it's a scientific name, is found to get in wounds caused by pruning, and it could cause the twigs or small branches to be infected, and it could cause the plant to die. But some more problems from the atmospheric wave that came through back when California had their had all those rains a few months ago. And then the last thing here, 7 new AVAs in the country. And I'm going to read you this because these aren't your traditional ones that you say, oh, there's a little AVA that popped up in California. These are all around the country, 7 new AVAs. Conneaut Creek AVA in Ohio, C-O-N-N-E-A-U-T, Conneaut. It's near the Grand River Valley and one of Ohio's other two single-state AVAs. So Ohio now has three on it. Creek. It covers 37,116 acres. There's a couple of wineries, famous wineries in there, and Riesling, Pinot Noir, Cabernet, Chardonnay, common grapes. Next one, Kaw Valley AVA in Kansas. Kaw is a traditional name for Kansas, an old Indian name. The AVA is in the northeast part of the state, and its drainage basin is the Kansas River. AVA will cover 5,493 acres, contains 33 vineyards, 500 acres under vine, and let me see, how many wineries does it say? No, it doesn't. But it is new in Kaw Valley AVA in Kansas. Next one, Neshoba, N-A-S-H-O-B-A, Neshoba Valley AVA in Massachusetts. Neshoba Valley is located in between Neshoba Hill and Mount Wachusett. And it's about an hour north of Boston, and the mountains in the valley hold the warm air in and protect the regions from the harsh wind from the coast. The AVA acreage is 57,000 acres. They've been growing grapes there since 2008. There are only two vineyards with less than 100 acres, and there's a winery called Ironap Cellars, and they've got a variety of different grapes there. Albarino, Memberger, Marquette, Arundel, and Arundel's one I just told you about, and Cabernet Franc. Next one, Nine Lakes of Eastern Tennessee AVA. First single state AVA in Tennessee. There are others that bleed over the border, but they're big ones like the Mississippi Valley AVA and stuff like that. This is in eastern Tennessee, and it has 32 vineyards, 29 wineries, 232 acres of planted, and it's a 2.6 million acre area. So it's a rather large area, but that's the newest AVA. Champlain Valley of Vermont. This is the newest AVA in Vermont, but the first AVA solely in Vermont. It's on the eastern shore of Lake Champlain, and it gets cold, but they planted grapes from University of Minnesota that are very cold tolerant, from Marquette and La Crescent. And currently, there is more than 115 acres under vine. The AVA, I don't know how big it is. It doesn't say how big they are. Well, all the rest of them do. But the Champlain Valley of Vermont, so I don't know how big that is. Next one, Tyrone Foothills AVA of North Carolina. T-R-Y-O-N, Tyrone. It's entirely in North Carolina, 239 square miles. It will be the state's 7th AVA. And most common grapes planted in there are the Merlot and Cabernet Franc, Chardonnay, Petit Massin, and Chambertin. And they have other varieties too, but those are the main ones. And it doesn't say how many wineries. 5 vineyards in the AVA, but it doesn't say how many wineries. Next one, Upper Chamberlain AVA in Tennessee. Cumberland. I said Chamberlain. I read it wrong. Cumberland. I said Cumberland Gap. Upper Cumberland AVA in Tennessee. The Upper Cumberland AVA will cover the north central portion of Tennessee. Smaller in area than the proposed Nine Lakes region, this one covers 2.1 million acres and only has 71 planted acres. All of the region's eight counties have wineries. There are a total of 10 winemaking facilities and 55 vineyards. So quite busy in that AVA. The area they plant American hybrids, Muscadine, Marshall Foch, Catawba, Cuyahoga, and Niagara, the Upper Cumberland AVA in Tennessee. So there's new AVAs out there. If you're in any of those areas, check out the wineries and ask them about the new AVA. They'll be happy to tell you all about it, I'm sure. At least they should be, you know. So
it's a big accomplishment. Should be
happy
about it.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, they should be happy about it, should be knowledgeable about it, and they should be happy to share it with you about their AVA. It's sad when you talk to different people in different parts of the country who are in an AVA, and you ask them about their AVA, and the poor people behind the counter are not aware of it. And that's a slight of the wineries themselves all around. I mean, they really should educate the people about AVAs, because it's something, you know, it takes a while to establish, and, you know, the everything to get to the point where you have an AVA. So, yeah. So, you're right. So, there we go. Even with the glitch, we got ourselves in an interesting, informative program tonight.
For sure. Yeah. And recovered quickly. So, that's always good. The Champlain Valley AVA, this was while they were still pushing for federal designation. There's 25 vineyards and wineries throughout the valley with 116 acres of commercial grape production. All I could remember just based off of memory here.
Just
but,
off the top of your head?
That
yeah.
The facts just, you know, it takes a little bit, you know, the age or whatever, but
well,
got it finally and remembered that part. But that was in 2022 while they were the winemakers were still pushing for the official designation of the Champlain Valley. That's what it'd be the first for Vermont, as they said, and that's what they were saying, how many were in the valley, the Champlain Valley. So I'm guessing that's
really quite a few there. Wow.
Yeah, never would have guessed that. So what time is it? It's almost 10 p.m. We will get to
the
Welcome to Friday, folks. That's pretty good. When you said the time, I go, it's after 8 o'clock? After 8 o'clock already? Wow. All right. We will be back next Thursday, which will be June the 8th and 7 p.m. Eastern time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you all for tuning in, and enjoy your weekend. Be safe, and we'll catch you next time. Hopefully.
Yeah. Good. Thanks for listening. Be safe out there.
Thank you.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com.
www.wineindustrysense2009.com. Archive shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
And go to the green room. The green